Gotovach, everyone. It's a real privilege to be able to be here with you at this Malava Malka. I want to begin by wishing a mazel tov to Dr. Marlene Daniel on the occasion of being selected as Student of the Year. Is that better? Mazel tov to Dr. Daniel on being selected as Student of the Year. I have the great schus to learn together with her and with a number of other special women on Wednesday mornings. And I think she absolutely is a wonderful embodiment and a true paradigm of what it means to be a Jewish woman who is constantly furthering, looking to expand her spiritual horizons. Thank you for everything that you've done, I'm sure, for WIT, for our community, and we hope that Emirat Hashem, you will be a source of nachas, not just for this organization, but for your family and for your community until 120. So those of you who come to the classes at WIT, and thank God, through the classes at WIT, I've gotten the opportunity to learn with many of you at other shiurim as well. Know that I normally don't give a class or give a shiur without source sheets. So tonight I'm making a little bit of an exception. Actually, before I go on, I really just also want to take the opportunity to thank Mrs. Shulman. Where's Mrs. Shulman? Is she here somewhere? To thank Mrs. Shulman. I have to tell you, Mrs. Shulman is the fastest person on email I've ever met. I don't push send, and there's already a response. And I have a feeling it's because of her incredible love and dedication to this organization. And of course, to thank Linda Elman, and just to echo something that Mrs. Shulman said, I'm pretty sure there's not an organization in this community that does not have Linda's imprint on it. And that's an incredible testament to her constantly renewing reservoir of strength. And it's so beautiful that there's such a magnificent institution of Torah in our community that really is only vibrant and thriving because of the handiwork and effort on Nafshim Tzidkan Yoskelish. Baruch Hu should bench both of you and your families with Arichos Yamin Bishanim Nachas from your children and Nachas from all of your beautiful Talmidos. So as I was mentioning before, I normally don't give up to give a shiur without Mari Makomos. But the truth is, you know, Mr. Shulman left me a message on Erev Shabbos, and I was very happy she left it for me, because it was something that was going through my mind as well. I had a topic that I was going to present tonight. I think the topic was Chanukah. The topic was Chanukah. And I was going to share with you some insights about this magnificent Yom Tov. You know, there's so much to speak about with Chanukah. The Ger Rebbe brings down the idea. He says, when you look at the Gemara Masechta Shabbos, the Gemara discusses the laws of Chanukah, and the Gemara actually is structured in a very strange way. The Gemara first goes through all of the pertinent laws of Chanukah, and then the Gemara asks the question of my Chanukah. So what is Chanukah? And then the Gemara goes into the story of what happened in the historical Chanukah. And the Sfas Emes quotes, he says, it doesn't make sense, the order. The Gemara should start my Chanukah, first start with the question of what is Chanukah, and then give me the historical background, then go into the halachas. But the Sfas Emes says something so beautiful. He says, you know, you could learn all of the halachos of Chanukah. You could know all the pertinent Jewish laws. You can know the entire legalistic framework. You can know exactly how to fulfill the mitzvah to the T. But Chanukah is so profound, Chanukah is so powerful, that even after absorbing all of the halachic knowledge, you're left with one question. My Chanukah. What is the true profundity of these days? What is the true essence of this Yom Tov? There are certain times in the calendar. We know why we sit in the sukkah. We know why we blow the shofar. But Chanukah itself is such an incredible anomaly. On one hand, a Yom Tov, a legitimate Yom Tov. On the other hand, there's no Isser Malacha. You can go to work. You can do pretty much whatever you want. There's a beautiful minhag that women don't do work. Women don't do Malacha at the time that the candles are lit. But otherwise, again, it's just a regular day. Because Chanukah represents this interface, this synthesis, this meeting of heaven and earth, this meeting of the spiritual and the mundane. And as such, the Gemara says, we could go through all of the halachos, but we're still only scraping the surface, my Chanukah. So I was prepared to give you a shiur on Chanukah. But then a lot of things happened last week. And the truth is, many of us have found ourselves in a fog since last week. not knowing exactly how to navigate the tragic, tumultuous circumstances that have really fallen upon our community. The devastating and tragic reality that the Moskowitz family must now contend with. We dedicate our learning, all of our learning tonight, l'schus of Refuah Shelema, for Tamara Dina Baskina Shulamis, and the zechus of an aliyah for the neshama of Moshe Simcha Ben Rab Daniel Dov Ber. Whenever a community buries a child, there are no words. When the loss of that child is compounded by a mother who is in such a precarious situation, not only are there no words, but it's often difficult to understand even what to feel, how to react, what is a person supposed to do. I'm sure for many of you this evening, you came out to a beautiful evening, a celebratory evening, and there's a part in us that feels, is this really right? Is this really right? Is this what we should be doing? But what's the alternative? The alternative to sit home, to cry, to mourn, to be Menachem Avol. You know, Shlomo HaMelech said perhaps one of the most profound pieces of Solomonic wisdom. L'kol zman va'eis tachas ha'shamayim. There's a time for all things underneath the heavens. And there's an eis livkos, there's a time to cry. There's a time to be besimcha. There's a time for everything in this world. The great challenge that we often encounter is trying to figure out what time is appropriate for what. What should we be doing at any particular moment? So I want to share with you what I think is a mahalach, is an approach. I don't pretend to have answers. Thank God I'm married to a very strong and wonderful woman who does have all of the answers. So I don't usually have to have the answers. And even if I do, they're not usually correct. So, but I want to share with you what I think is an approach. What I think perhaps we could glean a little bit of wisdom from Chazal about how to navigate these difficult and tumultuous times. I want to begin with a story. There's a beautiful story that's told that one Shabbos, the Baal Shem Tov HaKadosh was sitting at his tish, was sitting at his Friday night table, surrounded by his Hasidim. And in the middle of the Seuda, in the middle of the meal, the Hasidim noticed that the Baal Shem Tov began to smile. Baal Shem Tov was always a very happy person, but there was something different about this smile. And okay, he smiled, then it went away. A little while later, the smile came back. And this repeated itself throughout the entire tish. The tish, you know, the Friday night Seuda of the Baal Shem Tov spanned a number of hours. And the big smile kept on appearing, disappearing, appearing, disappearing. But you know, by the Hasidim, they don't really ask the Rebbe why he does certain things. Okay, whatever it is, the Rebbe is smiling about something, they went on. Immediately after Shabbos, the Baal Shem Tov summons his gabbai, he summons his attendant, and he orders him to go ahead and ready the horses, ready the carriage. We have to travel to some far off town. The gabbai again doesn't ask why, follows orders, gets the carriage ready, and they begin on the journey. The Baal Shem Tov orders the carriage men to go to some far-flung village. And then they get there. The Baal Shem Tov begins to ask the townspeople, do you know where Shapsi the bookbinder lives? Shapsi the bookbinder. So people see the Baal Shem Tov is looking for some guy by the name of Shapsi the bookbinder. They say, sure. Shapsi was a very simple Jew who lived on the outskirts of town. So the Baal Shem Tov navigates the narrow alleyways of this small little village. You can imagine the scene. It's late on a Matzi Shabbos. He knocks on the door of Shapsi the bookbinder. So can you imagine it's late Matzi Shabbos? You get a knock on your door. The Baal Shem Tov HaKadosh is standing right outside your door. Shapsi opens the door. The Tzadik Hador, the Gadol Hador, is standing there. So Rebbe, yes, is everything okay? To which the Baal Shem Tov says, Shapsi, do you mind if I come in for a few minutes? Of course he does. He doesn't. I mean, he invites him in, offers the Baal Shem Tov something to drink. And the Baal Shem Tov is just sitting there silently looking at Shapsi. Shapsi says, Rebbe, could I ask, what are you doing here? And could I ask, I'm sure he said it much nicer, you know, what exactly brings you to my home late on a Matzeh Shabbos in the middle of nowhere? To which the Baal Shem Tov says, Shabtzi, tell me, what happened last night? Shabtzi says, Rebbe, I don't know what you're talking about. Baal Shem Tov says again, Shabtzi, what happened last night? Shabtzi looks down and becomes red in the face. To which the Baal Shem Tov says, Shabtzi, don't be embarrassed, but I need you to tell me what happened in your house last night. He said, Rebbe, okay. He said, Friday afternoon, my wife told me we had no food for Shabbos. Friday afternoon, my wife told me we had absolutely nothing. And she said, maybe we should go and borrow something from the neighbors. We live next to kind, good-hearted people. Let's borrow something from the neighbors. And I said to my wife, no, we're not going to take anything from anyone. I work hard, and if for whatever reason, it's the Ratzon Abori, it's the will of God, that we're not going to have food for Shabbos, then that's the way it's going to be. But we're not going to ask. I worked as hard as I possibly could. And if HaKadosh Baruch Hu is not going to give us the parnosa, we just simply have to accept it b'simcha. We have to accept it with happiness. And Shabtzi says to the Baal Shem Tov, Rebbe, to be honest, I was so beaten down. I was so downtrodden. But I decided to go to shul. I was going to say Shir HaShirim before davening, before Shabbos, Mincha, before Kabbalah Shabbos. And I was ready to accept whatever God had in store for us. Fast forward, davening is over. I'm making my way home. Shabbos says, as I get to my house, I see that the home is illuminated by beautiful candlelight. And as I get closer, I smell the beautiful aroma of fresh challah, of fish, of a beautiful seudah. And Shabbos says, to be honest, I was angry. Because I thought for sure that my wife had asked the neighbors for something. But I decided, you know what? It's Shabbos Kodesh. I'm not going to walk into my home angry. So, I went ahead. I took a deep breath. I walked into the house. And right when I walked in, my wife, she said, don't be upset with me. Don't be upset with me. I didn't ask anything from anyone. So what happened? So Shabbos said, my wife told me that she too was broken about what our Shabbos is going to be like. So she decided, if we can't have a beautiful seuda, let me at least do whatever I can to covet Shabbos. Let me do whatever I can to prepare for the Shabbos. So she decided, you know what? I cleaned the house before, but I'm going to do another additional cleaning, to covet Shabbos. And as I was sweeping up in the kitchen, I noticed something glimmering in the crack in the kitchen floor. And I bent down and I saw it was a pearl. And it was a pearl from my tiara that I wore as a challah. I scooped up the pearl. I ran out to the marketplace right as the vendors were closing everything up. And I purchased what we needed for Shabbos. And Shabbos, he said, Rebbe, I was so happy in that moment that I took my wife's hands and we began to dance around the table. And we danced for 2 hours. There was so much simcha. There was so much happiness that we couldn't sit down to the seuda. We just danced and danced and danced. And Shabtzi looks up at the Baal Shem Tov, red in the face, says, Rebbe, I know. You're here to give me mussar that I danced with my wife. To which the Baal Shem Tov said, Shabtzi, let me explain something to you. I was sitting at my Shabbos table, villages, kilometers away. And in the middle of the Su'uda, I felt such a wave of simcha, such a wave of happiness pass over me. And the Baal Shem Tov said, I didn't know where this happiness come from. So I closed my eyes. You know, the Baal Shem Tov HaKadosh, when he wanted, was able to ascend from this world into the celestial sphere. And my soul left my body for those few moments. I ascended into the celestial sphere, into the Ribono Shel Olam's abode. And I saw the Malachim were dancing with each other. And I said, Ribono Shel Olam, what's going on over here? Why is everyone so happy? To which HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, because there's a simple Jew in a faraway village by the name of Shabtzi, who is dancing with his wife, who is so overwhelmed by such magnificent simcha. And when a Jew is b'simcha, when a Jew is happy, The Malachim are happy. And when a Jew is happy, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is happy. And when a Jew is happy, the entire universe is in a state of simcha. Says the Baal Shem Tov Shapsi, I had to meet the guy that got the Malachim to dance. I had to meet the man who had the entire celestial abode on their feet, celebrating, had the entire Malach Kadra Malachi Asharis dancing hand in hand. I share this with you because a Jew always has an obligation to be besimcha. We've studied many times in our Tehillim class the beautiful statement of Rabbi Nachman of Breslov, a mitzvah gidola lihios besimcha tamid. And there are many different interpretations as to what exactly that means. But Rabbi Nachman speaks about this idea that it is always important for a Jew to be in a state of simcha. Because if a Jew's not happy, if we're not happy, it doesn't just impact us. It impacts the Malachim. It impacts the Ribono Shel Olam. It impacts the universe. So what I'd like to discuss with you tonight for a few minutes, and really just a few minutes, this will not be as long as my Tehillim Shir, which never stays just in the hour. But tonight I will keep it short, I promise. What I want to discuss with you is how do we maintain our simcha in the midst of sadness? How do we maintain a happy and healthy disposition? How do we keep ourselves not just getting by and not just surviving, but how do we allow ourselves to be happy people, even when we find ourselves surrounded by such despair? And you know, I want to make it worse before I make it better. Right now we're in a fog because of an incredibly acute local tsara. But the truth is, if you're a feeling person, every single day there's this fog. Halfway around the world, there's a place called Aleppo. And there are innocent people that are there that are being gunned down as they try to leave their homes. There are children buried beneath rubble whose bodies will probably remain beneath that rubble because no one cares enough to go out and get them. How many African countries have large swaths of their population suffering from malnutrition and starvation? The world is a difficult place. So often we wear blinders. Try not to read the newspaper too often. Try not to be cued into what's happening too often because it's difficult, because I want to be a happy person. So when sorrow hits close to home, I can't wear my blinders anymore. But when difficulty hits close to home, understand what it does. Is it blows the blinders away. There are no blinders. The world is filled with so much pain. So I could choose to walk around being a morose person. I could choose to walk around constantly being burdened by the overwhelming suffering of humanity. Or somehow, some way, I have to learn the lesson of Shapsi the bookbinder. And I have to learn to dance. And I have to learn to be happy. And I have to learn to celebrate, even in the midst of all the difficulties. You know, the Jew has the most difficult of all situations in life. See, the rest of humanity has the luxury of cognitive dissonance. I could go ahead and pretend that nothing's wrong. But the Jew, we feel the collective pain of humanity. We feel the collective pain of the world, not just of fellow Jews, but of every single man, woman, and child in this world. There's not a day that goes by that our hearts are not broken for the incredible difficulties of mankind. So, but yet, despite all of that, I have to carry the collective suffering of mankind in my heart and in my soul, and I still have to be besimcha, a Herculean spiritual and emotional challenge. How do we manage this? How do we balance this? And perhaps we could find three approaches, three answers from Chanukah. Before we get to Chanukah, or on the way to Chanukah, I want to draw your attention to something amazing that happens in this week's parsha. Before we get to the parsha, back to Chanukah. One of the most famous questions that we have about Chanukah is, when we think about Chanukah, what miracle are we celebrating on Chanukah? Are you serving coffee here tonight? Ketavach, everyone. No one got a nap today. We celebrate the Pach Shemen, right? We celebrate again the little cruse of oil that was only enough for one day, lasted for 8 days. Wonderful. Incredible, incredible miracle. But you know what's amazing? There's another miracle that gets virtually ignored over the course of Hanukkah, and that's what? The military victory. We, when I say we, the Chashmonaim, a small group of valiant Kohanim. You know, the Kohanim weren't normally the warriors, right? The Kohanim were the ones who normally secluded themselves within the Beis HaMikdash. A young group of courageous Kohanim. Interestingly enough, the inspiration didn't come from them. The inspiration actually came from their sister, a woman by the name of Yehudis, who was Hasmonean daughter. She's the one who gets her brothers to go ahead and rise up against the Syrian Greeks. The most formidable fighting force on the face of the earth in this time in history. And a small group of Kohanim are able to overcome this major regional superpower. And in fact, the only time we make mention of that is when? Only time we make mention of it is in Alanisim in Shmona Esrei. So during Shmona Esrei, during benching over Hanukkah, we make mention of the fact, oh, and by the way, we also had an incredible military victory. All of the emphasis is on the Pach Shemen. All the emphasis is on the oil. And the obvious question is, Chaim Shmuel Levitz, Zecher Tzadik Livracha, has a beautiful insight. He quotes from this coming week's parsha. We know in this week's parsha is one of the most tragic episodes in the entirety of Bereishis. Yosef is sold by his brothers. Yosef is stripped of his clothing, of his dignity, thrown into a pit, and then sold as a piece of chattel. And the Torah records an amazing statement. The Torah says the brothers go ahead and decide to sell their brother instead of killing him. Vayavru anashim. I'm sorry. Vayishu lechol lechem. They sat down to eat. Vayisu einehem. Vayiru vine orchos Ishmaelim ba'amigilon. They see an Ishmaelite caravan. And they decide to go ahead and sell him to the Ishmaelite caravan. And the Torah tells us that the caravan was carrying Sri Velot. Balsam and lotus. Sweet smelling fragrant items. So Rashi HaKadosh says, who cares what the caravan is holding? What does it matter to us what the caravan is holding? To which Rashi HaKadosh says, this was a miracle. Why? Because these caravans normally only carried foul and putrid smelling items. But in the merit of the tzaddik, Yosef HaTzaddik, the Ribono Shel Olam got him a caravan that was carrying sweet smelling items. And asks Rav Chaim Shmuel Levitz, are you kidding me? Yosef HaTzadik has just been sold by his own brothers. Yosef HaTzadik has been rejected. You know, by the way, it's worse. We'll talk about this more on Wednesday morning. But you know, it's worse than just his brothers. Yosef HaTzadik thought that his father was in on it. Because why would my father send me to my brothers alone in the field, knowing how much they hated me? He thought it was a setup. One of the reasons he never contacted his father over 22 years. He thought his father was in on it. He feels betrayed by the entire family. So can you imagine for a moment, you're Yosef HaTzadik, you're sitting in that caravan, your whole life has just literally imploded right in front of your eyes. And then what do you say? Is that balsam? Is that lotus I smell? Can you imagine Yosef HaTzadik? Do you think he even thought for a second that it smells good instead of smelling bad? His entire life just literally is coming crumbling down in front of his eyes. And because the caravan driver has a nice air freshener thing hanging from the rearview mirror, suddenly again, that's the nace. Suddenly everything is wonderful. Suddenly Yosef is going to feel good because there's a nice aromatic ambiance around him. How are we to understand? Chaim Shmuel Levitz says something absolutely amazing. He says, you're right. The sweet aroma of the caravan didn't cure anything. But Chaim Shmuel Levitz says something so beautiful. He says, you know what it was? It was a neshika. It was a kiss from the Ribono Shel Olam. You see, sometimes in life we feel alone. And sometimes in life we feel forsaken. And sometimes in life all we want to do is borrow the words of King David and say, Keili, Keili, Lama Azavtani. Where are you? Where are you? We know you love us. We know you care about us. But why do I feel so far? Why do I feel so forsaken? Why do I feel so alone? And the Ribono Shel Olam's heart breaks when we feel alone. And so you know what he does sometimes? He gives us a little kiss on the head. What does every single parent do for their child when your child is in pain? Every single parent. And I have to imagine it's not just a Jewish thing. I think this is a parent thing. You give your child a kiss. Oh, but come on. The kiss is not going to take away the earache. And the kiss is not going to take away the sore throat. And the kiss is not going to do anything to alleviate the pain of the shot. But what does the kiss represent? The kiss represents the idea that the parent is saying to the child, I know it hurts, but you're not alone. I know it hurts, but I haven't left you. You're going to have to undergo this pain for whatever the reason is. But I am right here by your side. Says Rav Chaim Shmulevitz, when Yosef walked into that caravan and he saw he experienced the aromatic aberration. It was sweet smelling instead of foul smelling. What he understood in that was, the Ribono Shel Olam is with me. Did it take away the pain? Probably not. Did it make things any easier? Probably not. But you know, the only thing worse than suffering is suffering alone. Is thinking that you're forsaken and all on your own. And the Ribono Shel Olam gave him that neshika, gave him that kiss, that little beautiful kiss on his forehead. Tell him, Yosef, the road ahead is so long. And the road ahead is so tumultuous. And the road ahead is paved with so much pain. But I just want you to know that I'm here with you. I want you to know that I'm by your side. I'm going to give you a little kiss that hopefully you will feel in the years ahead. Says the Chaim Shmulevitz, that's the essence of Chanukah. You ever wonder to yourself, why did the Ribono Shel Olam need to make the little cruse of oil last for 8 days? Let's play this out for just a moment. Imagine they went ahead and they lit the oil and it stayed lit for one day. What would have happened? What would have happened? Nothing would have happened. Life would have gone on. We would have been fine. We'd still be here enjoying the beautiful Malava Malka. Life would have been absolutely wonderful. There is absolutely nothing that the candles or that the oil being lit for 8 days contributed to our maturation, spiritual, emotional, as a people. We didn't need it. Had God said, you know what? I'm going to sit this miracle out. I did a lot for you guys. I'm going to sit this one out. You know, we'll get to the next. We would have been fine. So what was the point of the miracle? Why did HaKadosh Baruch Hu make a miracle that the Pach Shemen stayed lit? Says the Chaim Shmulevitz, because it wasn't necessary. That was the point. Because it wasn't a necessary utilitarian miracle. You know, when we stood by the banks of the Red Sea and the Egyptian army is in hot pursuit, God had to split the sea because there was no way out from these circumstances except through the sea. It was either die or miracle. God did not have to make the oil burn for 8 days. So why did he? You know why? Because it's a neshika. Because it's a kiss. Because the Ribono Shel Olam telling us, I don't need to do this for you. But I'm doing it for you because I want you to know that I love you. I'm doing it for you because I want you to know that I'm here for you. I'm doing it for you because I want you to know that you're not alone. Because the coming years will not be easy. They were not easy. Even after we defeated the Syrian Greeks. They were difficult years. But the Ribono Shel Olam says, I'm here with you. It was the neshika, the great kiss of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And I think that we have to try to be attentive to the neshikos, to the kisses of HaKadosh Baruch Hu in our everyday lives. Well, I will tell you, I know this is not a big deal to a group of wonderful women, to mothers. I try to make sure that every single day I'm always home before my kids leave the house. My little ones, the older ones already left. But I try to make sure that I'm home every single day because I'm makbid to kiss them and to tell them that I love them. And not like a, you know, goodbye, I love you, you know, carpal's honking, please get out already. Like, look into their eyes, tell them, I love you, I care about you, have a great day, and give them a kiss. Because, you know, every single parent knows that when our children leave the house, we know not what the day holds for them. We don't control so many of the different variables. And I'm not even chas v'shalom talking about, God forbid, tragic. I mean, we don't know if somebody's going to be mean to them. We don't know if they're going to have difficulty on a test. We don't know what's going to happen to deflate their self-confidence. We don't know. So I want to make sure that my kids know that I love them. I want them to hopefully feel that kiss on their forehead throughout the entire day. Is that kiss going to make everything better? Is that kiss going to take away all of the challenges? No. But at least they'll know Tati loves me. At least they'll know Tati's probably thinking about me. Each of us has neshikos from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. The Ribono Shel Olam kisses us each and every day. And sometimes though we're so caught up in everything that's going on in life, and sometimes we're even so caught up in the things that are not going right, and the things that are not so wonderful, that we forget to be attentive to the neshikos. That we forget to be attentive to the beautiful divine kisses. It's important for us to take time every single day and ask ourselves a simple question. How did God kiss me today? Let me enumerate the kisses I got from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. All right, maybe I know the patches. Maybe I know the difficulties. Everybody could always rattle off the patches, the things that didn't go right. What about the kisses? How many kisses today did I get from HaKadosh Baruch Hu? And let me sit down and let me write them down. Let me ask my spouse, what kisses did you get today? My children, what kisses did you get today? Let's compare our kisses notes. Let's see what you got. Let's see what I got. And you know something amazing? When you pull your collective divine kisses, it's absolutely overwhelming. How many times did Ribono Shel Olam kisses us each and every day? Lesson number one, or approach number one for this evening, as to how to maintain simcha even in the midst of sometimes difficult circumstances, is to be ever cognizant of the voluminous number of divine kisses we receive every day. Track them, be attentive to them, and be thankful for them. Lesson number two, and I promise I'll just take a few more minutes of your time. One of the most important machlokes in Bai Chanukah is a machlokes in Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel. I've mentioned this before in the past, about how to light the menorah. Beis Shammai says that you light 8 to 1. Beis Hillel says you light 1 to 8. So the Gemara says, what are they arguing about? So Beis Shammai, interestingly enough, models his hadlok on their Chanukah after Sukkot. By Sukkot, we offered a total of 70 offerings over the Yom Tov of Sukkot. We started with 70, we make our way down. So Beis Shammai therefore says, Chanukah mirrors Sukkot for a variety of different reasons we're not going to get into tonight. And therefore we start with 8, make our way down. Beis Hillel says, Ma'alin bakodesh ve'ein moridin. Beis Hillel says, no, we always ascend, we go up in matters of Kedusha, we don't go down. You start with 1, you make your way forward. And the Ma'aral, in his Sefer Ner Mitzvah, says something so beautiful. He says, you know what they're really arguing about? Chanukah is an opportunity for rededication. Chanukah is an opportunity to revitalize us. You know, for many of us, by the time Chanukah kind of comes around, we're already losing a little bit of our Yamim Noraim glow. Right? Me, Yom Noraim, I was going to change the world. This is my year. I'm going to change this. I'm going to change that. I'm going to better this, better that. And then what happens? What happens? I know no one here knows. I'll speak from personal experience. What happens is life happens. Life happens. I get back into my routines. I get back into my habits. And again, already by this time of year, you know, Rabbi Yitzchak Berdichev points out that the seasons, external seasons, very much mirror internal seasons. By the time of this time of year, where nature is beginning to die down, right, where there's cold, there's snow, I'm beginning to feel cold on the inside also. I'm not feeling as inspired. So Chanukah is an opportunity to re-inspire ourselves. Chanukah is an opportunity to reinvigorate ourselves. The machlokes Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel is how does a person go ahead and rededicate themselves in a spiritual sense. And Beis Shammai says, 8 represents perfection. If you're going to undertake something in life, you have to start with perfection. You have to start with 8. The foundation has to be rock solid. Because if the foundation is not solid, you can't build anything on it. If the foundation is not solid, everything you build will be rickety and can chas v'shalom collapse. So if you're going to start, if you're going to rededicate yourself, rededicate your life, you have to start with perfection. And Beis Hillel says, Beis Shammai, my dear friend, I agree with you 1,000%, but here's the problem. If you tell people that they can only get started with something until they have all 8 counts, until they have perfection, you know what's going to happen? No one's going to do anything. Because if I have to wait until 8 candles are lit to get started with anything in life, then at the end of the day, most of us never have all 8 candles lit. Instead, Malin Bakodesh Ve'in Moridin. Beis Hillel says, don't wait for the perfect moment, but make the present moment perfect. Take what you've got and just light a candle. Take whatever's going on in your life, whatever your life circumstances are, figure out how to create a spark of spirituality. And as soon as you get something started, you'll see something amazing. That once there's one candle, there's the ability to light two. And once there's two, there's the ability to light three. Sometimes in life, you just have to get started. You know, there's a piece of the Hanukkah story that's often overlooked. People think that when the Hashmonaim came back into the Beis HaMikdash, the great miracle was that the Parshim and the little cruise of oil stayed lit for 8 days. But you know, there was something else missing in the Beis HaMikdash in the temple besides oil. What else was missing? The menorah was missing. Remember, the menorah was made out of pure gold. The Syrian Greeks took everything of value out of the Beis HaMikdash. When the Hashmonaim came in, the problem wasn't just the oil. The problem was the menorah. And therefore, again, what to do? The Gemara says something so dramatic. They had a choice. The choice was, well, you know what? There's not enough oil. There's not enough menorah. There's no menorah. If we're followers of Beis Shammai, this is an imperfect situation. How could we rededicate the temple under imperfect circumstances? And what would they have done if they were following Beis Shammai? Nothing. But instead, what did they do? Listen to this dramatic Gemara. They took their spears. They tied their spears together. They made their spears into a menorah. And that was what the first Hanukkah was commemorated with. They followed the advice of Beis Hillel. Take what you've got and make it work. Don't wait till tomorrow. Don't wait until next year. Don't wait until the kids are older, the kids are younger. There's more shalom bias, less shalom bias. I get along with this one, don't get along with that one. We all have our list of excuses of things we're waiting for before we grow. Don't wait. Just light the candle. Just light the spark of ruchnius, of spirituality. And once you light one candle, something amazing happens, which suddenly you discover your ability to light more and more. You want to know how to maintain simcha in life. The greatest simcha in life comes from growth. When a person is always growing, when a person is always a mevakeshas, when a person is looking to say, how could I expand myself and make myself greater? There is no greater simcha in life than knowing that each and every day I am becoming a better person. And in this realm of growth, I want to tell you something that's very important. And again, I'm just talking to myself. I mean, hopefully not really, hopefully you're listening. But these ideas are things that I say for myself. You could take them or leave them. I'm telling you what I use for me. People often say, you know, we want to do something to grow. We hear about tragedy. We hear about difficulties. We want to take something on. I want to tell you something very important. The greatest form of growth is not taking something on. The greatest form of growth is finding the courage to address your weaknesses. It is so easy to take something on. You know why? Because when you take something on, it has that new spirituality smell. It's exciting. I feel good. I'm doing something dynamic. I'm doing something great. And I'll take this and I'll take that. And it's all great. There's only one problem. There are holes in my spiritual persona. There are deficiencies. There are Achilles heels. The greatest form of growth is not something you take on. The greatest form of growth is being honest with myself. What are my flaws? What are my shortcomings? Where are the areas that I know I'm not measuring up? And how can I create an action plan for life to become better? That's growth. And where there is growth, there is Simchi Nor Moshchem Letzato writes that it's easier to learn the entire Talmud than it is to change one midah, one character trait. That's why most of us, when we want to grow, look at additional stuff we could take on, because that allows us not to have to look internally. Because if I look internally and I realize that there's some stuff in a state of disrepair, it's uncomfortable, it's difficult, and it's a lot of work. But true growth comes from being honest with myself, acknowledging the shortcomings and deficiencies, and finding the courage to address them. Point number two is that true simcha in life comes from growth. It doesn't mean that growth makes everything okay. It doesn't mean that if you're in a growth trajectory, you're not going to cry over tzaras. And it doesn't mean that you won't walk around life with a broken heart. There's no etzah in the world that could save you from those realities. But when I know that every single day is purposeful, when I know that every single day is meaningful, when I know that I'm uplifting and bettering myself each and every day, then at the end of the day, I am simcha. And lastly, and with this I'll conclude, one more lesson from Hanukkah. You know, the major idea by Hanukkah, you know, Everybody, when they want to create the ultimate Hanukkah ambiance, how do you create the ultimate Hanukkah ambiance in your home? Meaning, what do you want to do? You want to eat potato latkes. Okay, good. That is true. That is true. Right? You have this image, like, of the lights are off, everyone's around the menorah, the children's faces are illuminated by the light, everybody's so happy, everyone feels at one with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. There's only one problem, which is, that's usur. That's the one problem. Meaning why? Because the operative law by Neiros Chanukah is, Ein lonu rishus lishtamish poen. Right? We say in Neiros Hallelu, you are not permitted to derive benefit from the lights of the Ner Chanukah. That's why, again, the room has to be well illuminated. I'm not supposed to read by the Ner Chanukah. I'm not supposed to learn by the Ner Chanukah. I'm not supposed to use the light. To use the light is a prohibition. It actually profanes the light. Yet, amazingly enough, this stands in contradistinction to Neiros Shabbos. The halacha by Neiros Shabbos is you have to get benefit from the light. You have to get benefit. Somehow, someway, you have to benefit. So it could mean when you light Shabbos candles, that you light close up to the light, that the light actually illuminates the siddur, whatever you're using. But you have to get some type of benefit from the light. And if you don't get benefit from the light of the Shabbos candles, it's actually problematic. Person has to get benefit. And if Soloveitchik, Zecher Tzaddik Livracha, asks, I don't understand why this difference. Why is it that by Ner Chanukah, I can't get any benefit from light? And the Rav advances something amazing. The Rav says, because although there are many messages of the Ner Chanukah represents the idea, supposed to represent, a light in the distance. The Ner Chanukah is not a present light that is used for its light. It's a night in the distance. It's a light that reminds us that one day things will be magnificent. It's a light that reminds us that one day the world will be luminescent. It's a light that reminds us that one day Mashiach is going to be here. Umocha Hashem dima me'al kol panim. The Ribono Sholom will dry our tears. It reminds us that Shir HaMalos B'Shuv Hashem Eshiv HaSion Hayinu Kichomim. That the suffering one day will be like a dream, like a bad dream, that when you wake up, you're so relieved that it was just a dream. The Ner Chanukah represents the beautiful future that is in store for each of us. And as such, the third lesson of Chanukah, the third lesson for tonight, is how we have to always keep an unbridled sense of hope and optimism with us. It doesn't matter how bad things get. There is always a beautiful life. There's always a Ner Chanukah. There's a Mashiach who's coming. We could hear his footsteps every single day. You just have to listen. And in every single moment, and in every single Chorban, every single tragedy, it just somehow, someway, I don't know how, but I believe it, that it brings him closer. That's the Ner Chanukah. It's the light in the distance. I can't use it now because it's not here now. But it's the light in the distance that I look forward. It might be very faint, but I believe in it. And if I strain myself hard enough, I could already begin to feel its warmth. If we maintain a true sense of hope, of optimism for a beautiful future, we can maintain our simcha even in the midst of difficult times. So to bring everything together, it's from the Yom Tov of Chanukah that we are really able to maintain our simcha. Because like Shapsi the bookbinder, we have to learn to dance even in the midst of difficult circumstances. We have to learn to maintain simcha even in the midst of sometimes the most tragic of life events. And how do we do that? Three approaches. Number one, to be attentive to the kisses of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Take time to recognize the kisses. Take time to feel the kisses. And take time to dispense those same types of kisses to others. Number two, let us commit ourselves to lead growth-oriented lives. Because where there is growth each and every day, there's incredible simcha. And number three, let us become hopeful and optimistic people. Let us be the kind of people that nothing in life could drain my optimism. Nothing in life could extinguish my Ner Chanukah. And halavai, in the zechus of internalizing these lessons, in the zechus of the Talmud Torah, that all of you do every single day, we should be zocha not to light our menorahs here in Baltimore. And we should not even just be zocha to light our menorahs, even if you give me an Eretz Yisrael. But you know, there's still a week till Chanukah. I have a week for tonight. A lot could happen in a week. And I believe with all of my heart that if we internalize these lessons, we could bring Mashiach. We could do anything. We're Jews. We have the ability to turn the universe on its head. We have the ability to make Malachim dance. we can accomplish whatever we put our minds to. Halavai, we should be zocha. Through our tears, through our broken hearts, but through our constant simcha, to bring the Mashiach. And halavai, we should be zocha to celebrate this Chanukah, not just simply in our homes. We should be zocha, Mirat Hashem, to see Aaron HaKohen, the Kohen Gadol, kindling the newly beautiful, rededicated menorah in our magnificent Bayis Shlishi, b'mehera b'yaminu. Amen.
I apologize. I'm sorry that I went wrong.